President Bush is making a renewed push to allow religious-based social programs to compete for federal funding. His plan has sparked much debate. One argument in favor of these initiatives is that religious groups sometimes are the only ones able to respond to crucial needs in America's most neglected communities. In the first of two stories, WBUR's Anthony Brooks reports on one such effort in Boston.
In a gabled Victorian house perched on a hill in the Dorchester neighborhood overlooking Boston Harbor, the day begins a little after 6 in the morning with Bible study and prayer.
Thank you, Lord, for the opportunity you're creating for sacred institutions to serve secular purposes.
This building, once a crack house, is now home to the Azusa Christian Community Church and the Ella J. Baker House. The Baker House, which operates with a mix of private and state and local money, provides an array of after-school and youth outreach programs. It's led by Pastor Eugene Rivers, a 51-year-old Pentecostal who studied briefly at Harvard and Yale, then moved here in the 1980s when a crack epidemic was raging in Boston. The violence reached a dramatic climax in 1992 during a funeral at the Morning Star Baptist Church. A gang of hooded men stormed the church, fired their guns, and cornered one of the mourners and stabbed him.
The Morning Star incident was a wake-up call to black churches, and it was a moral indictment. The black churches had failed to take their message to the street, and as a result, the street brought its message into the church.
From that attack was born the 10-Point Coalition, an alliance of Boston clergy committed to ending youth violence through mentoring and collaboration with law enforcement. Now, once a week, neighborhood clergy, police, and juvenile justice officials meet at the Baker House. They share coffee and juice, as well as information about potential trouble, who's out on the streets, who's recruiting for gangs, and where.
What's the new vibe on the streets? So what would that indicate is sort of happening at the street level?
Boston Police Captain Robert Dunford says this collaboration represents an important shift from the racially charged tension of a decade ago.
10 years ago, if Gene Rivers and I talked, it would probably be not absolutely confrontational, but we'd be kind of at each other. I think that we've both learned that we need each other, that I can't do my job without him, and that he needs me to allow him to do his job.
Over the past decade, crime rates dropped in most American cities by as much as 50%. In Boston, it plummeted by 80%. And there was a big drop in civilian complaints against police. And many say the ministers played an important role. Eugene Rivers says in neighborhoods still dominated by crack houses, liquor stores, and broken down schools, only the churches can reach a generation of young people in need.
We recognize for lots of young black people that they did not want to hear a religious message. They wanted to see sacred institutions produce secular outcomes which would benefit the lives of young black people. It was then and only then that the young people themselves initiated inquiries regarding the nature of our faith.
On this day, it's clear that big challenges remain. There's talk of a new wave of car thefts in one neighborhood, new guns showing up in another, and a spate of gang fighting elsewhere. It will fall to Andre Norman, a street worker at the Baker House, to try to intervene ahead of police.
We'll go down now and talk to the guys as a method of intervention. Okay, you don't need the police to come down here. You're getting a heads up. We're coming to talk to you, saying, listen, we have some programs over here for you. There's a whole coalition in place to help you. We're just the front soldiers to come down and tell you this is for real.
Andre Norman is 33. He served 14 years in jail for armed robbery and attempted murder, then had a religious conversion, and is now one of Rivers' most trusted lieutenants. Today, he's trying to help a fellow ex-offender named J-Rock, who's struggling with a heroin addiction. J-Rock's eyes are bloodshot, and he looks much older than his 25 years. He says, like a lot of kids back in the mid-90s, he was lost in a world of drugs and guns.
It was fun. It was like the Wild Wild West. It was just like a rush of adrenaline, just knowing somebody's shooting at you and you ducking bullets and running and diving behind cars, and that's what we deemed fun.
When he was 18, the fun stopped. J-Rock went to jail for armed robbery and attempted murder and served 5 years. Now he says he wants off the streets and the heroin, so he called Andre for help.
It's nothing out there but death and jail, you know what I mean? And me, I know I'm better than that. Obviously, he knows I'm better than that because he's willing to help me.
I said, this is a deal, man. We'll help you get your life together. So for like the next 2 weeks, the plan is for me to stay with him or him to stay with me literally 24 hours a day until he gets to a point where he's actually kicked the habit, he's got his mind right, then we start giving him space.
For the most part, Baker House doesn't feel overtly religious. There are no crosses on the walls, though staff and clients can attend evening and Sunday services here in the church downstairs. The mentoring work, the public part of the program, operates upstairs. Eugene Rivers voted for Al Gore, but he says small black churches like this need financial help, so he welcomes President Bush's plan. But among the biggest questions about whether federal money should pay for religious programs is, do they work?
We don't know whether these programs are more effective than other kinds of programs.
Mark Chavis is a professor of sociology at the University of Arizona. Chavis says what little research there is inconclusive.
There is a study that seems to suggest that religious nursing homes perform somewhat better than secular nursing homes. But on the other hand, there's a study of child care programs that suggests that religious organizations are somewhat worse. So the little research that we have certainly does not support that religious organizations are better than secular organizations. We don't know that.
Those who want to steer federal money to faith-based initiatives cite anecdotal examples of success. But critics say they have yet to make a convincing case it would be money well spent overall. For his part, Eugene Rivers says religion in and of itself doesn't save kids, but he says it is what compels the faithful to help them.
The reason that I have lived in Dorchester, worked, had my house shot into twice and burglarized 6 times, and we stayed, was because of our faith. So when the bullets fly and all hell breaks loose and none of the critics are around, it is the faith that makes the difference.
But opponents to the president's plan, including Welton Gaddy of the National Interfaith Alliance, say commingling church and state threatens individual freedom and the vitality of the churches.
When in the history of religion have you ever known a prophet who would speak truth to power when power was paying the salary? That's where we're going, with the government co-opting religion.
President Bush has yet to win broad support for his plan, so it's not clear what part of his federal faith-based initiative, if any, will become law. But he continues to push it, arguing this country has a long history of government and church working together.
Medicaid and Medicare money currently goes to religious hospitals. Should this practice be ended? Child care vouchers for low-income families are redeemed every day at houses of worship across America. Should this be prevented? Government loans sent countless students to religious colleges. Should this be banned? Of course not.
So the debate continues. One side calls for the government to place our dollars where religious belief can do good, while the other tries to head off what it considers a dangerous leap of faith. For NPR News, I'm Anthony Brooks in Boston.